News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio, where you want it, when you want it.
Well, good morning, Saskatchewan, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I'm Warren Woods, but you can call me Woodsy. My pleasure to be the regular host of this show, and it's going to be a lot of fun. As I've said many times before, I'm not an expert, but that's why we have Rick Van Dyvendyke of Dutch Growers here to take your calls at 1-877-332-8255. If you would prefer to text your questions, you can also do that as well. Same number, 1-877-332-8255. Rick, good to talk to you again. Looking forward to doing this on a regular basis.
Yes, good hearing from you, Woodsy. And, yeah, it's going to be, you know what, we're gonna teach you a lot about gardening, Woodsy. Hello?
All right. Well, you know, I got to say, it's been a bit chilly, and little reminder that the end of summer is not that far away. I was actually playing golf the other day, and I noticed the leaves are changing as well. So weather, I understand, is an issue for many gardeners so far.
Yeah, with gardening, when you ever come into the end of August and temperature starts going below 10 degrees, and last couple nights we actually got very close to 10, so... But once you start getting below 10, then you, if you want to finish off your garden, then you want to probably start thinking about crop covers. And crop covers we use in the spring to start our garden. We use our crop covers to stop a lot of insects like, you know, like the cabbage bugs and everything else like the caterpillars. And you can put it over top and stop the onion maggots. You can put it over top of your plants as they're starting to emerge before the fly puts their larvae on. So you can use that at so many different times of the year that it is almost an essential part of gardening. And it's just a white cloth. It looks like a landscape fabric, but only it's white, and it lets light through and lets water through. And that can help finish off, especially if you've got pumpkins and you've got some tomatoes and also especially melons and watermelon. You can get, especially at the end of August into September, you can gain most of your weight. Like I've picked 17-pound watermelons because they gained all their weight in the last basically 2 weeks of the season.
All right, Rick, we were experiencing some technical difficulties here because I'm not hearing anything on this end, so we're going to try and get this all straightened out. A reminder to you, you can still call in. We're going to get this figured out here. 1-877-332-8255. If you have a gardening question for Rick Van Dyvendyke, by all means, send it along. You can also text that number as well, 1-877-332-8255. Quick break here while we figure out our technical issues. We'll be right back here on Garden Talk, 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. All right, welcome back to Garden Talk. Hopefully we've got our issues figured out here. Rick, have you got me?
Good morning with you.
Oh, you got me. Okay. I couldn't hear you earlier. We're provincial wide, of course, and we've got some phone issues, but I think we've got them straightened out. So if you have a question or comment for Rick Van Dyvendyke, by all means, give us a call right now, 1-877-332-8255, and you can also text that number as well if you have a question regarding your garden or anything else going on in the yard. In your particular place around Saskatchewan, as we mentioned earlier, the weather has been a bit of an issue, hasn't it? I mean, it is getting a little chillier out there, and people are having some difficulties.
Well, you know what, the biggest issue that the calls have been getting like crazy is things like blossom end rot on their tomatoes, and things like cat's acing on their tomatoes. The way you get these kind of cracks in them. And that's just from because we had hot, and then you get cool, and you get hot and cool, and you go, you're watering, and then it goes, the soil goes wet, dry, and that's the biggest issue is more environment that's causing a lot of these problems with a lot of things, even of hearing people with their cabbages cracking and that, and that's because all of a sudden, you know, it's really hot temperature, and then you give it lots of water, and it's just that this constant changing, and you get all kinds of things happening with your vegetables. So that's one thing you've got to remember is this consistent watering. And if you can't do that, be around to water to keep that moisture just nice, then maybe you have to try even some mulching in the garden. Put some bark mulch around your plants. and that'll help to retain the moisture better, so that you know, if you can't get home to water them in a good time to keep that consistent moisture, then just retaining moisture in the soil by mulching helps a lot as well.
All right, 1-877-332-8255 if you have a question for Rick Van Dyvendyk from Dutch Growers here on Garden Talk. Let's go to the phones right now and hear from Larry, who's got an issue with your ash tree, Larry.
Hi. I have an issue. Rick, I sent you an email a week or so ago with a picture. I don't know if you got it or not. Anyway, I have a young ash tree bought from your Regina store in 2018. So it's got a pretty slim trunk yet. But anyway, the bark is cracking, and it seems to be working its way up to the top. Now, I went on the internet, and it almost looks like an emerald ash borer, except that there's no bore holes.
Yeah, if it's cracking, if the tree is cracking, from where it happens is it happens in March and the first part of April. That's where the cracking starts, and it's called a frost crack.
Okay, it's been kind of like that all summer, and now I'm starting to really get worried.
Yeah,
because I have another tree like 50 feet away, an identical one that we planted in 2015. And it's vigorous and healthy and growing like crazy. But this other one, like even the leaves aren't the same shade of green. It's just not as vigorous a tree. And I wonder if this bark cracking has something to do with it.
Absolutely. The bark cracking has everything to do with it. So the one thing you can stop by the cracking on that tree is genetics on that tree is different, even in the same species, a little bit of genetic differences. And so what happens is that you have to really watch with ash trees, is that once you get around September 1st, you got to slow down the watering. Get that tree to get ready for wintertime. And then what you want to do around the third week in October is just give it one last good watering for the wintertime. And then also, if you're having trouble with cracking, is you want to wrap your trunk with a burlap. Just cut some thin strips of burlap and wrap it, or you can use it's called a white tree wrap as well, and you can wrap it around the tree, and the white reflects the sunlight, and you only put that on from basically November, and you take it off in May, and it'll stop that cracking from happening every time. But otherwise, the moisture in the fall is huge to stop that cracking. You need to get that tree a little bit dried out for wintertime, but then give it one last good watering, a heavy watering, around the 20th of October.
All right, Larry, thank you very much for your call. We really appreciate that, and hope that helps you out. Let's now go to Bev in Swift Current. Bev, welcome to Garden Talk. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, I have a question for Rick. I've got cosmos. They're about 5 feet tall. I planted from seed. There isn't a bud on them. My marigolds, the same thing. Nothing. What's going on?
The marigolds had no buds on them at all.
No, the odd one and the cosmos, not a one.
That's strange, because you should have, are you in lots of sun? Are they planted in lots of sun?
Oh, well, yeah, they're facing west. They're getting sun. Yeah. I'm not saying lots, but they're getting some, that's for sure.
Yeah, especially marigolds and even cosmo, the more sun you give them, the more they'll flower. But that's odd that they're not flowering. The biggest thing with flowering is what you want to maybe do a little bit. It's just, especially marigolds, stress them a little bit. Marigolds don't like to be really wet all the time.
Okay,
So just stress them a little bit, because what flowers mean that the plant's trying to produce seed.
Uh-huh.
And if the plants are doing really, really well, then they won't produce the seed, right? They'll just produce a lot of green growth, like a lot of leaves and everything else.
Okay.
And so stress it a bit, maybe cut back on your fertilizer a little bit. Okay, if you're fertilizing it lots, cut back on that.
No, I haven't. No,
yeah, then you should be. It probably has something to do with your location of where they're planted.
All right. Well, we'll move it for next year. And also beets. I have tops galore, hardly anything underneath. That's the deal.
Yeah. Same thing with that. Make sure that you're with your beets, that you pick the different variety next year. First of all, because different soil conditions will create that. Will happen as well, even with carrots. And I had a lot of calls about that this year. Is carrots had a lot of tops, but not very good bottoms.
Yeah, I have that too. Some are mine are nice, and some are terrible.
And so that had to do a lot with the temperature. We had that cool temperatures in early in the spring.
Uh-huh.
And it was a lot of moisture in the spring. That caused a lot of the problems as well. But a lot of the crops are starting to catch up now because we had the really hot weather.
Yes, that's right. Well, thank you very much. I love your show, and it's very good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Bev. If you have a question for Rick Van Dyvendyke, by all means, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. Let's move on here to Saskatoon and Jerry. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Very good.
I've got a couple for Rick, actually. I've got 10 by 20 foot area of Irish moss, and it's cost me a fortune to get it all, and it's coming up good, and I'm loaded with slugs, absolutely loaded. Do you have a product that I could buy at your store that'll take care of them?
Yeah.
I'm using salt on them, but I can't keep up.
Yeah, the organic way is take a flashlight at nighttime and go pick them, right? Organic way. The other ones, there's a lot of new, better slug baits out there now that are actually, you know, even safe for pets and that kind of stuff. They work pretty good. And what you have to do is you have to put out in your area close by your patch of moss is you need to put a little piece of plywood down and put your bait underneath that. Okay?
Okay.
With just a little bit of a gap so they can crawl underneath. And because they like to have places where it's moist and dark, okay?
Okay.
And so that'll attract them to that kind of area. So using the slug bait and putting that, otherwise other people have even tried and have a good success with, and I think it's a waste of a good beer, but I mean, if they take a little cottage cheese container.
It didn't work.
Didn't work?
It wouldn't go into the beer, no.
Yeah, well, you have to have the container down low enough so they just crawl straight in.
Oh, okay, that might be it. I'll try that.
You have to dig the container into the ground.
Okay.
So they just can fall into it, and they'll be attracted to that. But if you leave it standing on top of the ground, it won't work.
Okay, that's what I've done. Another thing is, you have a product there. You talked about these cloths. I typically lose half my Irish moss over the winter, and I replant. Is there something I can cover this whole area with that would help them winter?
Yeah, actually, you know what? It just in the construction industry, they have a lot of insulated tarps they use for, you know, insulating for concrete and everything else when they're pouring concrete in the wintertime.
Right.
Put an insulated tarp over top of it. I do that with all my plants, even my perennials that we winter over in pots.
Okay.
And it works very, very well. And just have a little bit of an air gap, you know, sticks, you know, put some pots or little bricks or something that'll hold it off the ground just a little bit.
Okay.
And then, so it's not laying right flat on top of the plants.
Okay.
But you got to remember, you got to put it on late in the season. Okay.
Right.
And then you got to take it off before it overheats underneath there.
Okay.
Okay, in the spring.
Okay, thank you. I'll try that. And I had just a comment for you. I bought an awfully large fountain from your store 2 years ago. A very big one. It's over 6 feet high. And I've had nothing but trouble with the ceiling at the bottom. Until this year, I went out and I bought some sealer for a motorhome roof.
Yes.
And painted it on the inside. And it's really worked good for me. Really, really good. There's no leaks. There's no nothing. And I was just wondering, is maybe that's something you should do before you sell them, is brush that stuff on the inside.
Yeah, one thing about in our harsh conditions in Saskatchewan, you get little hairline cracks no matter how good the concrete is. And so what happens is even all those hairline cracks is that what happens.
No, I'm talking about a fiberglass one.
Yeah, that would work too. But the one thing about fiberglass, you got with the water in it works pretty good. But even with the fiberglasses, you have to watch as well that you've got to dry them out completely in the fall.
Oh yeah, I keep it in a heated house. So I regret, Jay.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, clear coating them, especially concrete, is always recommended, just to be able to keep the concrete, porous concrete, from leaking. It's very important.
Okay. Thanks, Rick.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Jerry. This is Garden Talk. 1-877-332-8255. If you have a question or comment for Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. Let's move on. Another call here in Regina we go to. Gail, how are you this morning?
Not bad, you?
Very well.
I was wondering if I could bring in a hydrangea tree and a raspberry bush. They're still in the pots in the house in a south window for the winter.
Well, the hydrangeas are going to want a little bit of a time when they want to have a little bit of a rest, okay?
Okay.
So what I suggest you do is leave it outside. Okay, it's in a pot, right? Leave it outside in the fall until the leaves get a bit of frost and they drop off, okay?
Okay.
But I don't want it to be so cold that the roots get frozen.
Right.
Okay? The top can handle the cold. It's the roots that can't handle the cold in the pot.
Okay.
So leave it out there until it gets that where it drops the leaves.
Yeah.
And then what I would suggest you do is that you have a place like a garage or something like that you can put it in for a little while where it's a bit heated but not really warm?
Well, I have a garage. It's not heated.
Okay, it's not heated. So that won't work. So then what I would suggest is put it in a cool place in your house.
Okay.
With just a little bit of light and leave it there until about January the 1st. And then bring it up into that window.
Okay.
And then it'll have that just a little enough of a rest where you can get it started to grow again in your window.
Okay. And what about the I'm thinking it's a raspberry.
Yeah, exact same thing.
Exact same thing.
It needs a bit of a rest.
Okay, great. Because they were sticks when I got them.
Yep.
I'm quite surprised they grew.
Oh yeah, they'll be fine.
Oh great! Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Gail. Have a great day.
You as well. Bye bye.
Bye bye. 1-877-332-8255 is the number to call if you have a question for Rick Van Dyvendijk of Dutch Growers here on Garden Talk. Warren Woods with you. And we do have one question here, and you might have covered this already, Rick, but somebody just missed it, so we thought we'd do this again since we did have some technical issues earlier. Eric, was asking if we could repeat the topic about covering up melons, tomatoes, other fruit and vegetables in the last 2 weeks of August, and he was just wanting to know what was that product you were talking about.
Yeah, basically it's called a crop cover or frost cover. There's a whole bunch of different names for it, but it's a white fabric. It's very thin. It only will protect for about 2 degrees of frost, really. But that's all you really need because you're really just trying to get that nighttime temperature. As soon as it goes down below 10 degrees, especially when you start getting close to 5 or 6, you keep that nighttime temperature up, your fruit, like especially melons and watermelon, will produce in that last few weeks of August and the first week of September, they produce all their weight. And that nighttime temperature is when you can keep it up by putting the crop cover over it. That's when the nighttime, where you'll see the growth happening big time.
All right. Another text here at 1-877-332-8255. This is from Kathy. Do we need to remove the acidic soil and replace with non-acidic soil, or what should we do in order to grow lawn?
So they must have taken down a big spruce tree or a pine tree, and that's what they're worried about. Now, so what you want to do is you want to clean up as much of the needles as you can, because a lot of times underneath a big pine tree, there's just a thick mat of big needles. So you need to take that out and, yes, replace a little bit of soil. And you can also add a little bit of lime to the soil, too. And that will help sweeten the soil, make it more alkaline, which will counteract that acidity from all those needles.
All right. Hope that answers your question, Kathy. And one more. We've got about 45 seconds here. We have very sandy soil on our acreage and was wondering what variety of grass Rick would recommend planting. Also, what time of the year to plant it? That's from Ruben.
You know what? The really sandy soil, I find the best one that works in the sandy soil that I've had experience with is a grass seed called Western Parks. And you can get that out of a store called Early's Farm and Garden Center in Saskatoon. And it's been, I find, in the sand area, because I have an acreage that's pure sand, 70 feet down, pure sand. And that's the one that in the summertime when it gets really hot, it'll turn brown, but as soon as you get a rain, it turns green back again. And it just does, it seems to be the toughest for that type of condition. And you can seed it anytime between now and basically the third week of September, then after that, stop. Don't plant it anymore, or you can put it in right after that. You can put it in the end of October so it doesn't germinate, and it'll germinate first thing in the spring.
All right. There's a lot of questions coming in for Rick Van Dyvendijk, and we'll take more of those. But first, we're going to take a news break. You can continue to call or text in 1-877-332-8255. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Welcome back to Garden Talk. Got Woodsy, now your regular host here for the show, along with Rick Van Dyvendijk from Dutch Growers, taking your calls and comments either through the phone or via text, 1-877-332-8255. And we've got a couple more calls on the line right now, so let's not let them wait any longer. Let's go to Mike in Saskatoon. Mike, go ahead.
Good one.
Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good.
So I am calling. I got two questions. One, I got some rose bushes that I have them in pots right now. Do I need to heal them in the ground and then cover them, or are they okay in the pots, or what do I need to do to winter them over?
Yeah, they will not survive in that pot above ground. So you have to basically, you can plant it in the ground. Make sure if you want to protect the pot, just wrap the pot with some paper, but not plastic, okay? It's very important. So just put paper around it, bury the whole pot and all in the ground, and then mulch the area around the pot with a bark mulch or peat moss. Or you can bring it into a heated garage that does not get above plus 4 degrees.
Okay.
Okay, but does not go down below minus 10 either.
Right. No, I have a heated garage, but I do some work in it, so I get it usually warmer than plus 4.
Yeah.
But I could bury them then, I guess.
They'll do very well burying them. Just make sure you mulch them as well because they're not rooted, and so you just want to get that little extra bit of protection, and it'll be fine.
Okay.
All right, thank
you.
Oh, yes.
I have two questions, sorry. I have a second question is with regards to, I have a mature plum tree in my front yard, and it is in the exact location where I need to put a driveway, and I need to move this tree. My questions are, should I graft the tree? And if I should, is it too late or too early to graft at this time of year?
And yeah, normally I like grafting earlier in the season. But you can, even right now, you can take a lot of times you can take a bud from the tree and try to move it over to another tree if you want.
Yeah.
Otherwise, is this tree a big tree that you can't move it?
Well, it's, it is, I got a mover that can do it. The caliber is about 6 inches. It's about a 12-foot high tree. I keep it pruned up, but it's a really good fruit tree and the plums are fantastic off it.
Yeah.
I'm worried that if I just move it and lose it, then I'll never find another one.
Yeah, 6 inches. If you move it with a tree spade, you shouldn't have a problem.
Yeah.
But can you wait until the leaves fall off this fall?
Yeah, I could, yeah.
If you could wait till the leaves fall off this fall, if you move it with a machine at 6 inches, you won't have a problem.
Okay. That was my only concern was, will I lose it or not? So.
Yeah, you shouldn't lose it if you move it with a machine. Now, you got to remember, the machine should be, basically, you think about every inch of caliper. So you need, for that tree, you got a 6-inch tree. You need about a 60-inch tree spade to move it.
Okay.
Perfect.
All right, Mike.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Yorkton now, and Tim with a question about pine needles. Go ahead, Tim.
Hi. Probably 2.5, maybe 3 years ago, I brought in a couple of big loads of mulch for the garden, and I think there was a lot of pine in it. And I heard you say something about... I was thinking sulfur, but I heard you say something about lime. I'm getting like yellow leaves and even plants almost dying or just coming out of the seed and just not growing anymore. Is lime what I want or sulfur what I want?
You need to do a soil test first. So go to a local garden center or, you know, someplace that has a soil testing kit, and you want to check the pH of the soil. And you need to, first of all, go to a pharmacy and pick up some distilled water. You cannot use tap water to throw your results way out of whack, okay? So find out what the pH of the soil is. If you find that the pH is really high, then you need to use aluminum sulfate or sulfur. If you find that it's really low, then you need to use lime. So you really can't tell by unless you do a soil test. And it's not very expensive to do. It's not very, like I think it's about $4 or $5 to buy this test kit, and you can do it right at your kitchen sink as long as you use distilled water.
Okay, I did a test and the pH was very high, so that means I need sulfur then, not lime.
Then you need sulfur, not lime, exactly.
Okay, and I did the soil test with my well water and with distilled water, and I got the same results.
Okay, yeah, well water sometimes works well, but it's just that a lot of times right now, if you get like the river system right now, a lot of the pHs, especially in the spring, are very high. You can't use that well, that river, that municipal water.
Okay. So should I still maybe take it to somebody else and get a professional analyst? Like, do you have the ability to do that at your place or not?
If you did that test and you're finding that it turned out really green color, the test kit, you'll find that it's really, really alkaline, then you need to use some aluminum sulfate or sulfur to bring that down, and you'll see way bigger, better results.
Okay, I did do a test. I took a hole and did a furrow, probably 3 feet,
and replaced it with dirt I bought at, I don't know if it's your place or the other place, and the cucumbers in 2 weeks were basically producing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Okay. So perfect. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for your call, Tim. Appreciate it. Have a great day. Let's move on back to Regina. Talk to Jean. Go ahead, Jean.
Hi. My daughters bought me hibiscus from Mother's Day from your place.
Yes.
And we put it up against a trellis, and it has just thrived. It is vining all over, and there must be 50 or 60 flowers on it. It's just gorgeous. My question is, of course, how do I bring it in for the winter?
Okay, is it you plant it into the ground or is it in a pot?
In a pot.
Okay, so basically what you want to do is that by the September long weekend, you want to bring that plant indoors. But first of all, there's going to be a lot of hitchhikers on it. So you want to wash it down with your hose first, wash it really down really good, and then you may even want to take a product called Endol, which is a canola oil, insecticidal soap, and a little touch of pyrethrin, and spray the bottom sides of the leaves and everything. Just soak it down, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to cut all the blooms off before you bring it in, because all the, especially aphids and that, will hang around the bloom, the buds, and they'll reproduce buds inside your home. And so when you bring it inside, then you want to put it in a really the sunniest window that you have, and then it'll start producing flowers again for you indoors. Now, what may happen is it may drop a bunch of leaves, okay, inside. Don't worry about that, because it's just adjusting to the light conditions, and it'll put a brand new set of leaves out inside the house as well.
All right. Yeah. So I just cut all the vines and buds off that have grown all over the trellis then?
Yeah, you can do that. This is hibiscus, right? Or is it in mandevilla?
No, hibiscus.
The hibiscus, yeah. No, then you don't need to cut off all the vines. Just cut off just the flower bud. That's all you need to do.
Okay, but what do I do with these vines that have grown like 4 feet out? And
oh, yeah, you'll have to disconnect it from the trellis, obviously. If you can untangle them, that'd be the best way. But otherwise, yes, you could just cut them off
okay.
If you can't.
All right.
All right, Jean. Okay.
Thank you very much
for your call. Appreciate it. Boy, I tell you, Rick, it's interesting. Everybody's already looking ahead. You know, even as they notice the leaves changing and the temperatures getting a little chillier, already people are already looking ahead to what they do in the wintertime, for the winter.
You know, everybody wants to, they've had such good success, and they've tried different things, and they want to keep that going inside the house all wintertime, and it's a lot of fun.
One quick one here from Bob in Saskatoon. I've noticed webs high up in the choke cherry and apple trees that he has. What is it? How much of a concern is it for the trees?
Okay, there's two different things it could be. Like right now, I'm looking at my backyard, and I have some webbing on my mountain ash tree. And what that is it's a little tiny green caterpillar, and it made a just like a tent. It's like just like a tenting caterpillar. And so if it's like that type of thing, you just can cut that out and just destroy that little nest, and it'll get rid of all those little worms. But it also could be just a regular garden spider. And if it's a regular garden spider, they're just sending webs from branch to branch. It's nothing I really concern myself with, because it's just a regular garden spider and it doesn't hurt the plant. The spider mite, which a lot of people are worried about, there you won't see the webbing. The webbing is right along the stems of the trees, and you'll see the discoloring of the leaves because they're sucking on the leaves themselves. And so that's something that you can always bring into a local garden center to clarify what it might be if you do have that.
All right, still a little bit of time left for your questions and calls for Rick Van Dijvendijk from Dutch Growers. 1-877-332-8255 is the number to call or text. This is Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Hey, it's Woodsy here for Garden Talk with Rick Van Dijvendijk from Dutch Growers. We've got a ton of texts. I don't know how many we're going to be able to get to, but we do have a couple of calls left in our remaining time here in the final segment of the show, so let's get right to them. First of all, Steve in Bethune, go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I have a couple of trees. One is a mature flowering crab tree.
Yep.
And I would like to move it or transplant it to a different area in my yard. And another one I have, it's only about 2 years old, it's a maple hotwing. When is the best time to transplant those or move those type of trees?
The maples and both the flowering crabs, I like to transfer them basically in the spring. That's we have the best time. How big are these plants?
No, they're trees. The flowering crab, it's probably, like I say, it's a mature tree. It's probably a good 12 feet high, and you know, it's 10 feet wide, I guess. And the maple hot wing is it's a smaller one. It's like I say, it's only 2 years old, maybe about 6-8 feet tall.
Yeah, so 6-8 feet tall. You probably could move that. If how big is the trunk on it? Do you think it's only going to be about an inch and a quarter? Eight feet tall, correct?
Yeah, it's no more than 2 inches.
Yeah, so then you can move those by hand still, and that'll be not a problem. But you have to do it when the plant is dormant, when the leaves are not on the plant, and you can do it either in October, or the best time to move it is in April.
Okay, either. October. Okay.
All right, Steve. Thank you very much.
What about the falling crab, the bigger one? Like, what about that one?
Yeah, either
one. Probably got about a 4-inch stalk on it.
With a 4-inch trunk, then you probably were going to have to use a machine to move that size of a tree. And with a 4-inch trunk, yeah, you're probably going to need at least a 44-inch tree spade to move a tree that size.
And in the spring as well.
That you can move in the fall or the spring, doesn't matter. But best when the leaves are just starting to fall.
Okay, great.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Steve, for your call. Have a great day. Let's go back to Regina now and talk to Veronica. You've got a question about your cauliflower.
Yes. How long does it take a cauliflower to grow?
It depends on the different varieties you have. If you still have the seed packet, it'll tell you the day to maturity. A lot of them are around 60 to 70 days.
Okay. Oh, because mine are just starting to, like, some of them don't have nothing inside it yet.
Yeah, so what you probably have to do is, because we had such a weird spring this spring, well, I'm getting lots of calls for their cauliflower, their cabbages, and broccoli, it's all small. So if you want to finish it off this year, you're probably going to need to get yourself some of that that frost cover or ground cover. It's a white fabric. And that'll keep the nighttime temperatures warmer for the plant, and it'll fill out yet in the next couple weeks.
What about, do they cause a lot of bugs? Like, do you have to spray them with something?
There's not much you can spray them with that's around anymore, but this cloth, it helps keep the bugs off of them.
Okay.
Okay?
And I have one more quick question. I have a hibiscus plant. Can I plant it outside?
No, you can't.
Sure.
It's a house plant. You can put it outside for the summertime, but you have to bring it in for the winter.
Okay, otherwise it will die?
It will die.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right,
okay.
Veronica, thank you very much for your call. Lots of callers this morning, 1-877-332-8255 here on Garden Talk. We've got, as mentioned, quite a few texts, Rick, so we'll try and get to as many as we can here. First of all, from Louise, I've got trouble with the fruit worm this year. Cut the raspberries right down. What do I do to avoid that next year?
Basically, you can do is for the fruit worms, it's a tough one, but you can spray them just right about before the blooming time. But the problem is, like I said, if you get that fruit worm, it's a really tough one because you don't want to kill any of the bees that are coming around and pollinating the plant too. So the best thing to do is if you're having problems with that, is spray them in the evening, right just about when the fruit's going to start to form, and spray them in the evening when the bees aren't around with a product called Ambush.
All right. This next one from Fern. Good morning. I have a trumpet honeysuckle. All the leaves have dropped off, only the vine left. What do I do with it now?
It either got too wet or too dry. So it either got very dry and then it dropped off. Now, if the buds are still there, it'll come back again. But if you scrape the bark and it's brown underneath the bark, then it's dead and you'll have to replace the plant.
Hmm. All right. Well, hopefully that answers your question. Next one, we have an evergreen tree, approximately 30 to 35 years old. Top 10 feet of the leader is dead, appears to be working its way down the tree. There is no obvious signs of pests. It's also leaning heavily to the south, and some branches appear to be drooping. We are having a hard time getting a professional out to assess the tree. How should we proceed, says Kim.
Okay. So the top, there's two things that could be happening. It's one's called a spruce borer, and it's a, basically it's a beetle that lays its eggs and then bores the top part of the tree and works its way down. Okay, so you won't see them because they're inside, so you need to actually get up there and check if that's what it is. And you need to basically cut off the top where it's all died, because the borer is making its way down. The other one, but you wouldn't normally just see it from the top, but one is called needle cast disease. It would be sort of sporadic throughout the tree rather than just at the top. And you can look up on your computer needle cast disease to see a picture of, see what it looks like. But I have a feeling that you probably have a spruce borer if it's coming from the top down, because they start from the top 3 feet and they work their way down.
All right, let's see if we can squeeze one more in here in about a minute left. From Linda, our daylilies have spread out. When's the best time to thin these, and what is the best way?
The best time to thin them, I always say for those, is first thing in the spring. As soon as the snow's ground, the frost of the ground, is you actually move them and thin them. So that's the best time for daylilies. I have also done it in October when all the shrubs and trees have started turning color. But then I need to mulch them for the first winter, and then they'll be fine.
All right, Rick, we are right out of time. A lot of questions, a lot of texts, some we couldn't get to. I'm sure there is a way, though, for people to reach you if they want to ask you questions directly.
Yeah, just rick@dutchgrowers.com.
That is perfect. Hey, listen, we got through the first one here as regular host. It was a lot of fun, and looking forward to doing it again next week. Thanks for your time, Rick. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Woodsy.
All right, and we'll talk to you again next week here on Garden Talk. A 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.